4341-790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dennis.
Hey.
This is Andre Worland. Sienna, this is my first time calling Brass Tacks for the year. I would like to take this opportunity to wish God's blessing and mercy on our country this year. And I'm hoping that we will see ourselves through this situation and it would not be, well, see ourselves through this situation and we can get out of it as quickly as possible.
Thank you, sir, and the same to you, sir.
Thank you. There are so many things that we need to talk about with regard to this new, well, this jump in cases in Barbados, but there are two main things that I wanted to discuss. One is in terms of the way how the information is being provided to us now. And then, well, they're both related because I find that in recent days that there has been a disconnect in terms of the information. And even though journalists and the members of the public have been asking questions, they're not necessarily getting the answers. And I think that we need to move away from that situation. What I find to be rather alarming, and I watched the press conference yesterday in shock and disbelief with how the members of the government tried to put this calm over the situation and it's stable and everything, when in 2 days we recorded 211 positive cases, many of them local, the majority of them local, which is almost equaling the amount that we took, that we recorded between March 2020 and the 31st of December. Because up to that point, we had 395 cases. In 2 days, we recorded 211. And yet still, we can hear that the situation is under control and this level of calm and everything, which I thought was, for most people, was a disconnect from what they were actually hearing on the ground. Because in order to get this situation under control, and I think I heard you say earlier before, many Barbadians basically let their guard down because you were hearing there was no COVID in Barbados. And obviously, in a situation like that, persons would let their guard down. If you want persons to take this thing seriously, you need to share the information with the people, give them the raw facts without any sugarcoating, so that people would recognize how serious this situation is. Thankfully, today we are hearing that only 37 positive cases came out of the 1,436 persons who were tested on Sunday. I guess that, to some extent, that is still a high number, but to some extent is not as high as most people expected. And we would hope that that trend would continue and that the numbers would not reach the level that persons were expecting when the alarm was rung on Old Year's Day, right? But my concern would be, one, you're not getting a follow-up on information. I think it was either Old Year's Day or New Year's Day when the information was reported that when the persons on the were tested, including the prison officers, you were told that not only were prison officers testing positive, but there were four persons from the Barbados Defense Force who tested positive in that first batch that came back. We have not heard, we've only been hearing reports about what is happening with the prison. But we know that the BDF, Barbados Defense Force, has been called out in a major way to help in terms of increasing the security and offering support to the prison as well, and also to the police service. So is there any follow-up that the government can offer with regard to what is if the members of the Defense Force, since four persons tested positive, have they started a program in terms of testing the members of the Defense Force who are definitely on the front line, and interacting with a number of people, with the police force, in the prison system, and in other areas. So that is information that it would be good for them to share. And I'm hoping that they have a schedule in place, because at this stage we can't take any chances. In terms of, we heard about the persons in the hospital as well who were tested. So at this stage we should really have a routine in place where all persons who work on the front line are tested on a probably every 2 days or whatever the case might be, just to make sure, because we really would not want to have this virus going into the hospital. We would not want it going into the police force, or definitely breaking down the ranks of the Barbados Defense Force when those persons are being called out to assist in terms of maintaining control and security at the prison, where the prison officers are not able to do that, working alongside the police as well, and interacting and interfacing with the public of Barbados on a regular basis. These are definitely people who are on the front line. Now, the next major issue is in terms of how the Ministry of Health, through the Government Information Service, has been putting out the information to the public. That same press release that you read earlier, 5037, everybody on the Barbados Government Information social media page are asking this one question: why have you stopped separating the number of local cases from the number of visitors? As you would recall, before when the reports were given, you had the number of visitors, and they gave the information about the flights they came in and when. I can understand at this stage that the number may be more than the 3 or 4 that you were getting before, and it will be a bit tedious to write out all of the different flights. But I still think it is important that people know visitors and locals, because Barbadians are more concerned about the local transmission. How many people in the public have the virus? And also, we need to get to the stage where we start identifying the hotspots, because you have a COVID, a trace unit with 100 persons. You have a population of 280-something thousand people. Now, you can work out the math of how long it would take, how many persons, how you would break down those the population between those 100 persons. Wouldn't it be better if people had an idea of where the hotspots were? We knew the hotspot, one of the hotspots was the bus crawl, which was named.
How many visitors were in it?
We don't know, because everyone was...
And so identify a visitor for me. Tell me what a visitor looks like.
In this instance, the visitor that we are talking about were the persons who were in quarantine.
How do you identify a visitor? So that you said people would know the difference. So if I told you the people in quarantine, there were... Let me go back to the figures here to just pull some figures out of the hat so I don't sound too wrong. Now, say here the 11 men, 26 women, comprising both locals and visitors. Mm-hmm. Now, if you said 5 men are visitors and 20 women are visitors, what difference would it make to the figures? What difference would it make to what you think?
Before, when those figures were unknown.
I'm not asking what happened before. You said it should be done again. I'm asking what you get out of that information.
All right.
Because that information that you're talking about was given that way, and it did not stop the spread that we had. So I'm asking, if you give it now, what would it do?
No, Dennis. No. That information was given before, and it was persons who were in quarantine. So they were identified before they came out of quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not identify any persons who were out in the public walking around. So when they reported the figures before, 5 visitors, and they came in on XYZ plane, we were given the impression, or the information told us, that these were persons who tested positive on their second test, and they were still in quarantine and were taken directly from quarantine directly to Harrison's Point. So they were not in the public, circulating in the public.
Right.
No.
They were in isolation.
Right. So that's the difference, right, in terms of identifying the visitors who tested positive but were still in quarantine. That's the difference. From the locals who tested positive who were obviously out in the public. Now, if it was a visitor who was here on the island for 2 months, obviously that person was not in quarantine. And you can put a separate category for that, a visitor who tested positive, but that would go with the local numbers, because that person obviously was not in quarantine. So what I'm saying is, we need to still be able to separate the visitors from the ones who were in quarantine, because we are not really too concerned with them. they were in quarantine, so they did not get to interact with the public, and they went.
Sir, you're misusing language here that I'm trying to pull you up on, and people are telling me I'm being unfair to you. There is a difference between quarantine and isolation. We
I
have people, right, but you said there are people in quarantine, right. So it wouldn't have made a difference. But if they're quarantined and walking about, I don't get it. I'm missing something in what you're saying. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Let me just take it slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Before, the visitors, we were going through this from about August right down to December.
Right.
We took it that when they reported that visitors were in quarantine, it meant that they were in the hotel that they were supposed to be quarantined in,
right.
And they tested positive on their second test.
Right.
And if they did test positive on their second test, they were taken straight from the hotel where they were quarantined into isolation.
Correct.
You're only going
following
to isolation
you.
When you're positive.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I am saying to you, when they separated those figures, in terms of visitors who tested positive, those who were in quarantine and then went directly to isolation, those were not interacting with the public of Barbados. I am not even getting into the situation right now about the persons who breached quarantine.
Correct.
Because that's a totally different story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I am not getting into that right now. But what I am saying is that they need to start by giving, do not bulk the visitors who were in quarantine and tested positive with the locals who tested positive. And I understand your definition of a visitor. If it was someone who was a visitor of Barbados who tested positive, but this person was here for 3 weeks.
Or a return, or a student who came back. Right.
Right. Obvious, or a non-national.
No, you're talking about
national,
the national who came back.
The national who came back, correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But this person was in Barbados for more than the quarantine period. So obviously we know that that person was out of about.
And therefore they got it somewhere in the public domain.
So that, I would say, would be part of the local transmission.
Okay.
Correct?
Right. So what you want to do is separate local transmission from persons who brought it in. That's the basis.
Correct. So let's separate the local transmission from the ones who
brought it
tested
in.
Positive in quarantine.
In quarantine.
Because...
Okay, I get the separation. What I'm trying to find out is, with the state we are in now, right, where there's obvious cross-contamination, let me put it that way, how does separating it still make us manage it better?
It makes us manage it better because then we are identifying the sources of the problem. We are not, because all the time, we are only hearing the source of the problem being identified as one bus crawl, Brandy and Panani.
No, but I don't think so.
Yes, but we are not
No, sir, that's, sir, you see, and that is the fight that I keep having when I hear the comments and I see the comments. Right, because I listened to your explanation. Here's why I have this odd fight going on in my head. If we had people who were, let's say, liming by you, right, who have come forward and been tested, then the party you had at your house would be identified as a spreader. If we have people who are on a bus crawl and they were identified as persons who have the virus, that's why the bus crawl was the focus. And that's the fight I keep having, the fight that we assume that because we're talking about the bus crawl, because of the numbers involved there, that's the only one we have, that's the only one we focused on. I don't think that thinking is correct.
But Dennis, that is the only one which was named. Because up to last night, several people asked the Prime Minister and the officials from the Ministry of Health to name the other clusters in Barbados, and they went unnamed up to this point in time. So the only one that we could include in our narrative is the one which was named.
And but that does not that mean it's the only one. And that's what I'm getting at.
This is the point that I'm getting at, too, with regard to being able to identify where the hotspots are. Because, okay.
Why don't we assume that they're all hotspots until we get them named?
That means that every single body in Barbados should be right now heading to the polyclinics to be tested.
Yeah, because, listen, so over the course, let me ask you this question. Let me just interrupt you again and ask you this question. Over the past, let's say, week, Have you not seen notices from CIBC First Caribbean, various places that said, or staff, I think Emerald City was one of them, a staff member has tested positive, so we are. Which means that they, in those areas, even this company, had to test its staff. Does it not say, therefore, that there are places, some that have identified themselves, some that have not, where persons have been identified as being either suspected of, having been exposed to, and have had to be tested?
Here's
and 600 people went to the polyclinic 2-on-1 report. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the loophole, Dennis, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. let me use the supermarkets as an example. Two
Correct.
Supermarkets mentioned mm-hmm. that they were closing because of persons testing positive being in the supermarkets. Now, when it comes to contact tracing, because you know that when we enter the supermarkets here, we do not give our name. So the supermarket does not have a record of the persons who enter the supermarkets on any given day. None of them do. They mm-hmm. just spray you and they take your temperature.
Correct.
So in terms of identifying the hotspots, right, if the persons who attended the bus crawl knew that it is possible that they were infected, and thank goodness many of them went to the polyclinics and the different areas to be tested, right, and because they took their responsibility. But if you have hotspots in other areas, and you are not naming those areas, I don't know if I've been to any of those areas and if I should be getting a test. I don't know if any of my family members have been to those areas or people who come into close contact with me have been to those areas and if they should be getting a test.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, this is what I'm saying, that we need to identify the hot spots. I think it was also being done in places like Jamaica and stuff like that, because you need to identify the areas where the outbreaks happened and stop hiding them, so that, because Barbadians work all over the place in the hospitality industry. It could be the guy who delivers bananas from Martin's Bay to the villas in at Westmoreland or any other areas. He does not know if he was at risk, because he does not know if the store person, the storekeeper that he gave the bananas to, was in contact with the chef who came into close contact with one of the visitors who was positive. And that is why it would help for the Ministry of Health to take on that responsibility and give people the appropriate information that they can work with. Because I know that we cannot handle a situation where every single Barbadian decides, well, okay, I think that I was at risk, and I am going to the polyclinic tomorrow morning to be tested, because you're putting more and more people at risk by having all of those crowds of persons out there. And you cannot depend on 100 people or 150 people to have to call over 10,000 persons.
Okay, sir. 4341-790, Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Some good news first. I am impressed with this welcome stamp thing. It's the one area of endeavor that this administration has done that there's no praise that is good enough to meet what that deserves. I mean, that is so popular in the U.S. of all places. I don't know who came up with the idea. It's an excellent idea. The implementation seems to be bang on. That is working, and it will probably get better this year. I think welcome stamp is something that really and truly should be focused on in the best possible way. Congrats to everybody involved. What a fantastic idea that is. It's about time we got some good ideas coming up. Good news. We have a crisis management team in Barbados. That's good news too, isn't it? Crisis managers. I mean, I'd like to see Miss Motley in crisis management mode. She looks the best possible in crisis management mode. The problem with that, though, is that crisis managers need a crisis. And without a crisis, you don't really get to see them so much. But they look good as crisis managers. Invariably, crises should be avoided. They should be avoided. But if you're a crisis manager, perhaps you can allow for a crisis to slip through from time to time, because that's what you do. Now, a decision was made, clearly a business decision, that I actually agree with, because it represents that as a group of people that determine public policy, you have to balance the needs of various interests and the well-being of various interests. You know you'll take a risk, and you know you have the team involved that if that risk goes awry, if it goes wrong, you have that team involved to try to assess it. When a decision is made, and it was made, to allow for the British variant to come through the gates, you knew you couldn't possibly test for it. So you knew there was a very high chance that that variant would get even past quarantine and all that kind of thing, because it's the risk you take when you make decisions. And you got the team in place, perhaps, to mitigate against that risk. But my point is that you made a decision knowing that there was a risk. You knew there was a very good chance the variant would get into the Barbados population, and you move forward from there. Because they cannot shut the hotels down. They cannot do it. They are the ones, they earn all the West Coast properties and stuff. That's how we make a living in the real world. Okay, so the population may have to suffer, and you do what you can to make sure that you somehow restrict that suffering to the barest minimum. You're dealing with a virus. The couple of mistakes that were made is when Ms. Motley said that it's a deadly virus. I think that was inappropriate. That was a miss. But the good news that came out, the good news I think that should be incorporated now in decision-making going forward, because you understand that various interests have to work. It seems as if of all the people who are suffering from this decision, the COVID normally make nobody, well, it does make people uncomfortable, but the decision-making, the policies are what is killing economies. Decisions have to be made to save these economies and people's livelihoods and stuff. The Prime Minister of Vincent cannot understand why you got a curfew, because as if, you know, this thing only exists at night and out during the daytime, and I 100% agree. But it appears to my mind that the only people or the industry that is being made to pay the most for all of this is the entertainment industry. And they've been asked to pay since February last year in containment mode, and we still are in containment mode. And the question is, maybe it does not have to be that way. My point has always been, it does not have to be that way. Dr. Corey Ford, wasn't particularly upfront, but what he said made absolute sense because it fits completely into my disposition. He says, you wear a mask, your chance of getting this thing is about probably 0.5%. He says the chance of not getting it is 95%. If two people wear masks, the chance of this thing spreading is less than 1% between the two people, because you can get it in your eyes. If two people wear masks and they cover their eyes with a shield, the chances of, and you sanitize. You sanitize, you got your hands with this thing, you put a shield on your face, and you wear, two people wear masks, the chances of this thing crossing from one human being to the other, but via droplets or being or having stuff on the surface which has been wiped down, is zero. Sorry, I'm shouting your ear, sorry. It's zero. There is no chance of this virus spreading between two human beings as long as they're both wearing masks and they are covering their faces. Now, from the day one when I was engaging you and Mr. Ellis and everybody else about this, the point has always been that if you know this to be the case, you have to admit that the whole concept of social distancing is only a redundancy. It started back in the 60s when you had smallpox and they were spreading things with droplets and stuff as well too. And you weren't probably wearing masks, so you were telling people stand 6 feet apart, because that droplet probably will not go 6 feet across. You probably got to sneeze real hard for it to travel 6 feet. So that was where that came in. But if you're wearing masks and your eyes are covered, you can be a barber, as Dr. Ford said. Dr. Ford is his name. You can be a barber. You can work at the place in there in St. Lucie. You could be a surgeon. You could be, you know, any number of people that come into direct contact with other people. Your hands are clean, sanitized, a mask, and you know those areas on your face that could receive stuff are covered. You are good to go. So I'm saying, if you made a decision to protect the hotel industry, and I think it's a good decision, I think that you recognize that there's a risk involved, and the risk obviously is manifesting itself because we don't have COVID. And that guy is talking about the bus crawl, but he know it comes from the West Coast. We have COVID. Yes, it's here. I'm saying let's go a bit further. Let's at least preserve the entertainment industry as well. I say, look, the social distancing is not necessary because we recognize that it does not spread as long as you wait. We are in containment mode. You're going to be uncomfortable wearing our mask. And as Ms. Motley said herself, if you find that people in your place are taking off the mask and keeping it up, shut the music down and advise them that if they don't do it, they're leaving the place. Let the entertainment industry go on at night as always. There's no need to social distance. That is the point. And for 3 months, I've been shut down. And now I hear Dr. Ford is actually agreeing. I would like you to call in and say, you know, my man, I don't have no problem with that there. As long as you're covering those things on your face, you do not have to worry about being in close proximity. You got people standing up on the sidewalk there in Black Rock at the polytechnic, polyclinic. And you look inside the building and you got a whole open space with empty chairs. And you got old people standing up, not even social distancing outside then. But yet you can't go inside the building. All the banks on Broad Street got people standing up on the sidewalk, the credit unions, because they don't want them to go inside. And the fear is if you get too close to my staff, and the staff already got this perspex screen in front of them. So even if you ain't got a mask on, you still got to get that molecule, you know, through the screen, that droplet, through the screen and into that cashier's, they're not calling cashiers, into that teller's nose, who's also wearing a mask. What you have the people outside for, this desire to have people social distancing is what is shutting down operations.
Okay, sir, I thank you very much. It has gone from your previous complaints to now social distancing only. Okay, sir. And the doctors agreed with you, so, yeah. Thank you.